Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom at voicesofmontana.com. I'm going to tell a story throughout this hour. Eventually, of something called custom gene replacement and a baby's survival. This baby wasn't expected to live past 1 year old. And this custom gene replacement is kind of a one-of-a-kind thing. It has given KJ life beyond what he was born with. This is genetics. How far has genetics gotten? It's kind of mind-blowing in a lot of ways because I'm not sure it's out there like, cancer, but it's all a part of it. We're going to talk more about that today. We have a hospital in Helena, Montana, the Chaudière Children's Hospital. You've heard of it. I'm hoping you're likely a supporter of that as well. It does a lot of good things. They have a gene therapy program that's actually 50 years old. We're going to talk about that today. Greg Asfed, CEO of Chaudière, is in, and also the lead genetics counselor, Maya Trout, here today. Chaudière Children's Hospital on Voices, Old Montana. CEO Craig Asfed of Chaudière Children's Hospital. Craig, how you doing?
I am doing great, Tom. Thanks again for having us here. It's always a pleasure to be able to speak to your audience, who are our patients that we take care of. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
And people who support your guys' mission as well. And then it's Maya Trout, who is, I'm so fascinated to chat with you. I can hardly even, I'm shaking here, a lead genetics counselor for Chaudière. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us today.
Thanks for coming in today. I'll start with Craig. Tell us about this genetics program. 50 years, really?
Yeah, it's been 50 years, and there's a story with it, right?
Yeah.
So what I would just say, first of all, for the audience is that you won't find another program like this in a rural state in the rest of the United States.
Right.
This program really was established through my predecessor, which is a fascinating story of itself. But the program that we have is all about Montanans. A lot of the audience, they think of Chaudière and they think we're a Helena-based, operation. We're located there. But this last year, we saw patients from all 56 counties in Montana. So there's a great story. And the people, Maya specifically, and our genetics department are just phenomenal, really smart people that are really making a difference in the lives of the patients we're taking care of.
Yeah, and that makes such a big difference, too. Maya, talk about the genetics program from your standpoint. What what does Chaudière's genetic program do for the state of Montana?
So our program is pretty special for a couple of reasons. Probably the biggest reason we're so unique is our outreach model and then also our integrated laboratory. So if we think of genetic testing laboratories, there's a lot of huge commercial laboratories where you send in your sample and you're just an order and a number. But when we do genetic testing for our patients here in Montana and actually around the country and world as well, that laboratory team knows those patients as well. We're able to tell their story as a clinical team to get the best diagnosis. And we see patients across the state. So we don't just see folks in Helena. We see the entire state and we travel to families.
That's what I like. 1,000 miles a month. Is that right?
Yes.
Outreach. That's good.
Yep. Yeah. So every week we're on the road and we do outreach to Butte, Bozeman, Great Falls, Billings, Missoula, and Kalispell. I think that's all of them.
How do you do a genetics outreach?
So the kind of the best part about genetics is really there is the physical exam and the conversation that we have with families, but then we can send all of the samples back to our lab for the actual testing. So we drive to patients, and sometimes our patients are still driving, 4 hours to get to that clinic site. So we recognize that it's really challenging to practice medicine in a rural setting. And this is one way we've kind of broached that barrier is by going to the patients. And that has been from the start with our program.
What does that bring for you?
So it really is bringing patients into clinic who wouldn't otherwise come. Mm-hmm. So if someone has to drive 8 hours to a genetics appointment in coming from a rural part of the state in the winter. It's just not happening. So it's really the difference of getting care or not. And the huge thing is, if it's not happening here in the state, these families are having to go to Washington, Colorado, Utah to get that care, which is even further.
Well, that's one of the challenges for healthcare in Montana. And Craig, you had said something here that changes the dynamic a little bit. A recent news about Helena being classified now as an urban area versus a rural area. And that does change reimbursement for medical services.
Absolutely, it does. And it, you know, for the viewers or listeners out there, it really doesn't make sense. When you look at Montana as a state, we are very rural focused.
Frontier is how some people would call it.
Yeah. And a lot of frontier, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know if I really understand how they came up with the definition, but that's what we've been dealt with and now trying to work through the hurdles and obstacles with that.
And that's kind of yet to be seen what exactly is going to come with that. That, you know, that's rather interesting. Let's talk about some of those challenges and then more on genetics here. But as you are operating a hospital, a children's hospital, talk about those services. And then there's expansion there. I think we need to catch up to date on that too. So give us the rundown of Chaudière, and then we'll launch into, you know, this whole genetics department.
Right, there. Right. So Chaudière is, you know, Chaudière has been around for 130 years. Yeah. So I'll start there. But we are a child and adolescent psychiatric hospital. One of a kind in Montana and probably regionally, where we provide acute and residential services under one roof. We're taking care of kids from 4 up to 18 years old, and again from across Montana. So we are. So we have acute units, residential units. We have an in-house school. So when kids are coming to us, they're allowed to continue their education. Which has been huge and instrumental in their lives. Mm-hmm. We also, in addition, provide services into 7 schools within Helena and have just applied for grant funding to expand that to other schools throughout the state of Montana. And then finally, before I get into genetics, is that we have an outpatient clinic in Helena, Butte, and Great Falls, where we're providing outpatient psychiatric services for kids in those communities. Very similar to the model in genetics. We're trying to meet patients part way so they don't have to always travel to Helena for care. So that's Chaudière and the psychiatric side. And then our genetics program has just got a 50-year history of some really innovative things that they're doing. And I could sit here and tell you stories of patients that they've treated. Maya can do a lot better, where we've had, you know, a specific kid in Bozeman who was diagnosed as one of 50 in the entire world, not in the country. So that's the magnitude of the work they're doing in genetics. And we are just really fortunate that my predecessor, who was a lab rat himself, as I would describe it, had the vision to really bring genetics into the fold of Chaudière.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. I mean, and we talked, it was a while back, maybe less than a couple of months ago, and got into that psychiatric side of things too, and the critical access and the how Montana is a little bit behind the eight ball when it comes to having critical psychiatric care, especially for minors. So it's very vital. I would encourage people to go to Chaudière.org and look up more information on that as well. So Craig Asfed, our CEO, and Maya Trout with us here, the lead genetic counselor. So Maya, what does the genetic lab look like? I mean, what's the program look like? Am I looking at computers with lots of documents, or am I looking at labs with test tubes, or am I looking at doctors with frowns on their faces?
No frowns.
Okay, good. What's going on here?
Yeah. So we are, we have 2 teams, but we're really integrated together. So our clinical team is made up of Montana's only medical geneticist. We have 2 genetics nurse practitioners who trained under him, and then 5 genetic counselors. Also on our team, we have a metabolic dietitian, a nurse who handles the newborn screening follow-up for the state, and a psychiatrist. And a support staff that helps with the clinical team. Mm-hmm. On the lab side, we have all of our amazing folks that do all of the parts of testing. So the lab looks like it's big fancy machines to me. Don't put me in a lab, but
right, yeah.
Our lab techs do all types of genetic testing. So we're looking at chromosomes under a microscope. We're doing DNA sequencing, so kind of reading our genes, doing a spell check of our genetic information. And then there's also some really unique testing that happens at Chaudière. And this is testing that's done in very few places around the country.
Is it patient-related, or is there research and discovery as a part of it as well?
So all patient-related. So we're a diagnostic genetic laboratory. So really, the lab is there to kind of support the clinical team in answering the questions, what is going on with this family and how can we best support them?
Go ahead, Craig.
No, I was, Maya, if you would, maybe you just explain for the audience of our arrangements with the state of Montana mm-hmm. and the newborn screening and those programs.
So this is going back to the beginning of the program, really. The state legislature and DPHHS has supported the genetics program really since its inception. And then also we have the state newborn screening. So people might remember when your baby was born, before they left the hospital, they had their heel pricked, and that was screening for a number of treatable genetic conditions. So our team cares for the follow-up of those patients in partnership with a metabolic geneticist who's based out of Colorado. So even more few and far between are those metabolic geneticists. So having this team that can do the follow-up and coordinate that care is really impactful for our families.
How does a case come before them? A patient or how does it? Yeah.
So a couple of different ways. We have amazing primary care providers in the state, and I think that's because we're so rural that they really have to be up to date on what's going on, and they're really good at recognizing when a family might need genetics. And then we also have our subspecialty providers around the state that send us referrals. So patients that might benefit from a genetics referral where we might see them are pediatric patients who have neurodevelopmental disorders. So maybe they have developmental delays, a diagnosis of autism, ADHD. There are many genetic conditions where that is a feature of that genetic condition. Kids with epilepsy and seizures, growth concerns, feeding concerns. On the adult side, because we see across the lifespan, we might see families who are pregnant or planning pregnancy, adult neurological conditions, adult cardiac conditions. So really a wide array of folks that we're seeing. And either patients are coming to us and requesting a genetics appointment, or their primary care provider or specialty provider recognizing that this is someone who seems like they might have a genetic condition and need additional workup and support.
I'm going to ask this question after the break, but we can think about that. You know, what does genetics tell them when they come in and they're maybe facing a malady or a disease? How does that inform their treatment going forward? And not only that, I'm so curious about it because, I think everybody has been touched by somebody who has some genetic diseases as well. And I'm no different. And there's always that curiosity about, wow, my future, what's my future look like now? And then you start thinking, you go back to your past as well. Wow, my history might have been affected by this. And so there's probably a little bit of discussion that needs to go along with this to get through them. Statistics, good or bad, they tell us something if they're done correctly. I've got a few here about, these rare diseases. Approximately 25 to 30 million Americans live with rare diseases, many of which are genetic, which I think is something new for us. I think we think of genetics and those kinds of diseases as terminal. But as Maya had said here, Maya Trout with us here from Chaudière Children's Hospital, the lead genetic counselor, along with Craig Asfed, who's the CEO, had said there are treatable genetic diseases. So, thank you guys both for being here. Craig, that kind of surprises me in terms of just how much genetic science there is in medicine, but yet it seems to go underneath the radar a little bit, but it's pretty cool to talk about.
Yeah, definitely cool to talk about and a key part of what we do. And I think that, the community really does not understand. We see genetics and we think we understand what that really means. But as you'll hear from Maya, there is a lot more to genetics and how we test for it, and then our genetic counselors and working with patients. So it's a bigger and bigger issue in the industry. And as I started the segment, is that most rural states don't have access to services that our genetics program is providing, which is really the cool thing. And then I'll just talk, not to lose what we're doing for Montana, but just to add emphasis too, we are recently getting ready to expand our genetics program into Wyoming and the state of Idaho for those obvious reasons.
You have to tell me more about that. What's the deadline for that, or where's that process at?
Well, you know, specifically, we have started interacting with medical professionals in Wyoming, specifically Casper, and what that's going to look like and the outreach with that. And then probably 2 weeks ago, we were invited to do a presentation to the medical staff of Kootenai Health in Coeur d'Alene, because the services, or for them accessing genetic services for their patients, it's up to a 2-year wait. Wow. As we were talking earlier. So our model is that, you know, we can provide faster service to their patients. And then maybe, Maya, if you just want to add to that.
Well, a program that's been around 50 years, so there's a lot of credibility in that, too.
Yeah.
So we're already seeing folks in Wyoming, Western Dakotas, Idaho, but at this point, they're either coming to our outreach clinics in Montana, or we're seeing them over telemedicine. So being able to expand our outreach to those locations would be such a huge impact for the entire region.
I'm going to go back to this question. What does genetics tell them? If you have a patient that comes in, maybe having trouble finding out what the, so you do some genetic testing on them. And then a door opens up to a longer conversation. But how does that inform the medical decision-making, and then also the individual, the personal decision-making too? I'm sure that that weighs heavier almost than I've got to go see a doctor next week and the week after. How do you manage all that?
So just a statistic to throw out, the average time to diagnosis for a genetic condition is 6+ years. Mm-hmm. So wow. Having that diagnosis, having that name is a huge impact, because it lets us know how we should best manage a patient, what the surveillance recommendations are. It also minimizes the need for extra medical evaluations and tests that maybe aren't necessary. It opens doors for potential treatments or therapies. 95% of rare diseases don't have an FDA-approved therapy.
Wow.
So understanding why someone is presenting the way that they're presenting, maybe we don't have a therapy now, but it opens the door to connect patients to clinical trials. It connects patients to other people with that condition or communities. They might be the only family in Montana, but if we can identify those families, they can connect to other families around the country, be connected to researchers who are working towards those therapies. So understanding what is going on is such a huge impact. And then from there, we can look towards, how do we support you in the school system? Mm-hmm. How do we support you in the things that make your life worthwhile, your hobbies and activities? I think of a family that had a recent diagnosis of a genetic condition that causes vision loss over time. So we had a kiddo who really liked sports, and automatically I was like, okay, how do I find and connect this family to sports for children with vision impairments and make sure that he can keep doing the things that he loves at the point that he loses his vision? And also, thankfully, there is a gene therapy available for that genetic condition too. So maybe there will be a point where he actually doesn't lose his vision.
Yeah. Give us more of that science. What defines a genetic disease? How many genetic diseases are there? And what is gene therapy?
So there are different types of genetic conditions, and it depends on what genetic information is impacted. And this is kind of an old school analogy now, I feel like, but if you think of our genetic information like a set of encyclopedias, our large structures of DNA are our chromosomes, so each book in that set of encyclopedias. So we see genetic conditions that are on the chromosome level, where a book or a chapter of that book is missing or extra. And then there are also genetic conditions where there is a spelling change in the words of that book. So there are thousands and thousands of genetic conditions. We have 20,000 known genes.
Yeah.
So there is a lot that's on our differential. And unfortunately, there's not one genetic test that tells us absolutely everything, but we're getting there. And there's new technology that we're hoping to bring on board that will help us get to that diagnosis faster.
Yeah, I just want to go back to what you said earlier in this segment is we have the only medical geneticist in Montana, which is, I mean, great individual, Dr. Abe Elias. And it's very difficult to recruit and find other medical geneticists. There's only so many in the country. And finding one that can really adapt to our model that's really spent a lot of time out traveling. Mm-hmm. So just know that I think the department became really creative through Abe's leadership of training nurse practitioners to really, you know, fulfill a role there while we continue to look. The other thing I think is really important about our department, there's very little turnover in our department. I mean, probably almost none unless somebody retires. So it's a really stable department within the hospital, unlike many of our other departments. So, and Dr. Abe Elias, I think every physician probably has access to him at any point in time that he makes himself available. So think of the magnitude of the number of physicians in Montana and them reaching out to him and now our nurse practitioners. So I don't want to lose that part of this because finding another medical geneticist, our top priority, but it's hard to do.
And that's Craig Aspett again, CEO of Schodair Children's Hospital. Maya Trout, lead genetic counselor. You were shaking your head. You were in agreement with that, especially about the training part. I mean, how in 50 years, how well has your partners across the state become to be, you know, more involved in this process?
So really, at its core, the genetics program has been about integrating genetics into communities. And the physician who actually founded the genetics department was not a geneticist by training. He was a general practitioner. So we have kind of kept that spirit alive where we are helping providers around the state recognize which patients might have a need for genetic services, and then they have access to us. So I think everyone has Abe's cell phone number. We also have a genetic counselor on-call number, so a physician can call in if they have questions about what test to order or questions about a result interpretation or should I refer this patient or not. They can speak to one of our genetic counselors directly, and there's always someone there to answer that call.
This is a hard setup, and I've got less than a minute here, but I want to talk about that emotional aspect of this as well. We got less than a minute, but just set something up for us here, Maya, in terms of how, when they receive this news, I mean, they need some help at that moment, don't they?
It's life-altering news, and it's an honor to be there to walk with families through that. And part of our training specifically is how do we deliver that news in a way that makes sense and is safe, and how do we help families deal with what comes next.
We're going to talk more about that as we come on back. It's Maya Trout, again, with the genetics program, lead genetic counselor, and Craig Aspett, CEO of Schodair Children's Hospital. What did you say, 130
years.
130 years, you know, and you guys have been a beacon, I think, for a lot of children, a lot of families in Montana as well, to know that there's a place that they can go and it's going to take some of that load off right away. And I know that's supported by you out there. So thank you for that. 20,000 known genes. And do you call them all by name, too? They all have a name, I suppose. Welcome back here. We're from Montana for Montana. Voices of Montana. We're talking Craig Aspett, CEO of Schodair Children's Hospital, and Maya Trout, lead genetic counselor with that program here as well. And the genetics is mind blowing in my mind. They all have a name, don't they,
Maya? They do.
Yeah. is there one here? And I started off with talking about this was a Wall Street Journal story in late September. It was printed here. There's a disease here, carbamoyl phosphate synthetase 1 deficiency. That's a name. But that's not a name of a gene. That's the name of a disease here. But it's a rare disorder, genetic, that prevents the body from clearing ammonia. And I don't even fathom that our body needs to clear ammonia. You know, and we have genes that help do that. But now I'm getting it. And KJ was, you know, just newborn, and the prognosis was really death before his first birthday. That is some of the hard truth when you're faced with some this, you know, gene disease. So they could have tried a liver transplant, but doctors at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and University of Pennsylvania created a custom gene replacement delivered to his liver through lipid nanoparticles, one of a kind. I see that story, and I'm going right to the end here. The end is just good news, is that that worked. And KJ is living proof of that. And there's joy and love, you know, surrounding that. I tell that story just to kind of get into, Maya, the science of genetics here, because what you can customize a gene replacement, what you can deliver it to the liver through lipid nanoparticles. What's going on there?
It's very nerdy.
Yeah.
And this is why I think a genetic diagnosis is so important as we're looking like towards the future. So as I said earlier, 95% of rare diseases don't have an FDA approved therapy. And if we think of what goes into drug discovery for a condition that might have 50 people in the world that are affected, it takes a lot of time and resources to get a therapy approved. And gene therapies are going to be so impactful as more and more research is being done, because we can target a tissue specifically. We can target multiple tissues specifically by basically fixing the genetic change that has occurred. And that is going to have a huge impact for people who wouldn't historically have a treatment available. There's even a push, so the Orphan Drug Act was signed into law in 1983, and this was a law that was meant to incentivize therapies for rare conditions, because it wasn't making money to think of therapies for these conditions. So it's been an incentive since then, and now gene therapy is huge because we're targeting that specific genetic change in that specific tissue, and it's having a huge impact.
I'm going to go into, you know, that's the science of it, and like you said, kind of nerdy. I like that. But the support side of it, it's so humanistic, and that's not, Craig, that's not unfamiliar to your hospital, because as you said, you have psychiatric care for children. Sometimes it's critical psychiatric care as well. You have to have a strong support system for the families to get that patient through, so to speak. Talk about that, and then I'm going to have you talk about that kind of emotional, personal support when you're looking at, wow, I have some kind of gene deficiency. What does that do for my family going forward? But how do you support people in those kinds of circumstances, Craig?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at the organization overall, is that, you know, we're providing services to some really vulnerable patients, right? And it's really constantly working on a culture internally of how we treat the whole family. It's not just a patient, it's the entire family. So providing all of the right resources at the right time. And our model in genetics as well as psychiatry, there is a lot of family involvement, because again, if I'm diagnosed with a condition, I've got to have the support of my own family as well as the medical providers. So I think culturally, it's always, we're working on how can we be more of that resource to the entire family?
Well, you said it's an honor, and that's heartwarming to hear that. It's an honor to help people through this time, but it's probably also a challenge.
Here's the thing. I go to work every day. I have all my stuff going on, but I walk through the door knowing that it could potentially be the worst day of someone's life when I'm at my job. So it's really important that I am caring for the whole family and making sure that the patient feels supported, their parents, their grandparents feel supported, their siblings. And I want to make sure that people understand what is happening, what could happen, and the supports that are available to them. I don't want any family to feel like they're alone in this. And I tell families all the time, we might not have to see you very often from a genetics perspective, but from that support perspective, if you need resources, if you are feeling stuck, if you are needing a break and you need resources for respite care or whatever, please call us because we can make those connections for you and also take that off your plate. These are families that have kids with a lot of healthcare needs. They're traveling all over the state for their doctor's appointments. And if we can just take one thing off their plate and provide that support, it's huge.
You know, and I would just add to that because it's so important and it is heartwarming, Tom, is when you hear Maya say, you know, she has the honor, but when I hear our employees introduce themselves as I get to be a genetics counselor or I get to be a child psychiatrist, it's not I'm a child psychiatrist. I get to, which is that honor part of it. And I think it totally changes the dynamics with the patients we're taking care of and how you show up every day and how you present yourself to the patient. And it's that trusting relationship, you know, that we were talking about during the break of, you know, that has somewhat gone away in healthcare, but for our model and the services we provide is a key component of what we do.
And I'll talk about, well, I guess I got a few minutes here. I'll talk about the ethics. I think you have to ask an ethical question when it comes to gene therapy, because one of the things I jotted down there, what's the future? And the future seems to be wide open. Discovery is going to go forward one way or the other. Sometimes our ethics lag in that. I'm going to get to that here in a little bit. I want to talk about the experience again as we're talking here. And Craig, you spent a little time, not just as the CEO of your hospital, as a patient of your hospital. Tell us about that process right now.
Yeah, I mean, for the viewers out there, and I wish I would have done this earlier in my career, but Monday night, I became a patient of one of our psychiatric units. So what does that mean is I showed up with clothing that is required for kids when they're admitted. You know, there's no phone, there's no shoelaces, there's no shoes, all of the things that we take for granted. These kids, when they're treated in our psychiatric units, that they lose for all the obvious reasons, so they don't hurt themselves. But it gave me a bird's eye view of what our staff deal with, you know, minute by minute, and the difficulties they're facing, but also the kids and when they come in and how they feel. I have lots of takeaways, but one example I would just tell the viewers is that every 15 minutes during the night, staff are checking on patients. So it was a real sleepless night for me, you know, first time. And I walked away thinking I had a 12-hour snippet of what our staff endures and what patients endures. And it was, what do they, you know, think of a week or 30 days or 60 days and what that feels like for a patient. So a lot of learning lessons. One of the most important, I've shared this with our architects, is I think it would have been really helpful to have done what I did before you started building a building, because it gave me an appreciation for the spaces we have and how kids use them.
What's your takeaway from that, Maya?
I'm so happy you did it. I think we can't know exactly what our patients are going through, but we can try to walk in their shoes a little bit and understand how we can make the experience better, how we can have a more healing environment. So I'm so glad that you took the time to do that.
Yeah, and I think in the healthcare system, right, we talk about the patient experience, but do we really represent the patient experience? I mean, we always look at it through the eyes of our own staff, which is important. It's an important part of it. But what do patients feel each and every day if they're going in for a lab test or an imaging test or as an inpatient? And I think my experience will be an experience that I'll take with me the rest of my life, mm-hmm, because it was that impactful.
Yeah, and I'll bet you a dollar you're going back in.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to do that. And you know, I just have to share is that, for me to do that, the kids all had to buy in and support me being there. Mm. So before I even went in, it was like, it has to be unanimous. You know, all of you have to support that because, you know, it's kind of weird to have this older guy show up on a unit with kids, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't, but they all endorsed it. They were engaged with it. And I'll tell you another thing. The kids never let me get away with one thing. They were the ones.
Oh, so you tried. Is what you were saying, right?
Yeah, they wanted me to experience what they experience every day. And that was just, that was powerful, impactful. And then I was able to connect with kids at a whole different level, understanding, you know, where they're coming from and meeting them there and their situation and their hopes and fears of being discharged and going back to, you know, their communities and their homes.
I like that. That's probably, and I won't go into it because I want to talk about what's the future next, but that's probably one of the things that helps repair that trust, I think, that had been damaged in the last couple of years with our medical community. If we're honest about it, that needs to be addressed, and that's one good way to address it. Craig Asfed and Maya Trout in with us here from Schoedaer Children's Hospital, and it's a lightning round here, and Maya's the lead genetic counselor, so I'm just going to ask and go wherever, you know, what we need to hear here in the final couple of minutes. What is the future of genetics?
So what's next is kind of our next iteration of genetic testing that's available. And the next big thing is something called whole genome sequencing, which if we go back to that book analogy, it's doing a spell check of that entire set of encyclopedias. Uh-huh. And the benefit of this technology is being able to look at a lot of genetic information with one singular test instead of multiple tests. So that's on our wish list for the lab, is to bring on whole genome sequencing, purchase that infrastructure, and then really bring that on board on our clinical team. And there's been a lot of work that's being done around the country, especially when we think of the NICU space and the benefit of this whole genome sequencing and accessing care faster and getting to a diagnosis faster.
So when we talk about, now cancer is a different thing because it comes from a different input at times. But when we're talking about curing some of these diseases, and you're talking to Maya Trout, she's shaking her head yes, because you see we can do some of this, right? What's in the eyesight? What's in the target right now?
For cancer specifically?
Or anything specifically, yeah.
So a lot of it is that targeted therapy. So if we want to use cancer as an example, we can do genetic sequencing of tumors and identify specific mutations and target therapy specifically. We can do the same thing if we think of gene therapies as well. So really the biggest thing is getting folks into to clinic and diagnosing them, and then we can bring those therapies on board.
Well, I don't have time really, but I said we'll talk a bit about ethics. How does ethics come alongside of gene therapy?
It is such an important piece to keep in mind as genetics is moving at lightning speed. A lot of times the technology is moving at a faster pace than us thinking about what this means from kind of a community impact. And there's a good phrase that is, nothing about us without us. So making sure that the communities, the people that are impacted by these genetic conditions and also by these technologies, are having input and say about what the future looks like for these people.
Craig, I know it's a bad point to wrap up on, but those technologies, they're expensive too. And I know you're a hospital funded by the kind support of people around you.
Yeah, we are forever grateful. Nothing is cheap in healthcare when you're trying to keep up with what's going on. But we have been very fortunate by donors who have come to the table, not only individually, but foundations that have supported what we're doing. So very, very grateful to those people and to partnerships like this. Being here with you guys today is just very impactful and helpful, and I think opens the door for other relationships.
Thanks for helping our families. Keep it up. Craig Asfed, Maya Trout.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.